the world, and we took India as our base. If you were freer than India, you were a free country, and so forth. I mean, you had to have some kind of base. And the interesting thing is, I couldn't decide whether Trinidad and Tobago was on this side of the line or that side of the line. And so it was interesting to pick up the New York Times the following morning, which said, as was pointed out, there are only 29 free countries in this world, and that, ladies and gentlemen, is how we make facts. What made the United States Constitution so great was the fact that it took the ideas of the Enlightenment and pragmatically put them into effect. So it wasn't an American idea to have freedom of speech or freedom of religion, but it was an American methodology that, again, put this into effect. And these political rights were copied over the years. Now, Mexico in 1917, followed by the Soviet Union in 1918, attempted for the first time to put into their constitutions so-called social and cultural rights. I say so-called because the big debate that's going on around the world and in constitutions is the difference between rights which are justiciable, rights which can be enforced in a court, and rights which are just on paper. And starting with the Irish Constitution, Article 45 of the 1937 Irish Constitution, we had the first world formulation of saying that there were certain rights, in quotes, which were not judicially enforceable and which could not be, and which would be in a separate section of the Constitution. And then there were rights which were judicially enforceable. And basically, these rights are the difference between rights in the abstract, which hurt no one, rights which are like freedom of religion, which are rights which everybody can have, and other rights like a right to an education, where it means somebody else has got to take money out of his pocket to take care of your children or what have you. And so this has been the big categorization. And I may say to you that India was the country which actually spent more time in constitution planning than any other country in the world, and had a whole section on rights and responsibilities regarding finding jobs and making sure everybody had enough to eat and educating everybody and literacy. And these were put down as policies of government, as distinct from justiciable rights. But I may say to you, at a time when we're all interested in quotas, there was a fascinating case in India right after the Constitution came out involving a quota of 17, you see, and the medical schools, the law schools, and so forth, on admissibility. It was always a proportion of 17 for every 2 Brahmin Hindus, 4 Brahmin non-Hindus, 2 Muslims, 1 Anglo-Christian, 2 untouchables. And so on this quota system, a suit was brought in India saying, but this violates our Equal Protection Clause, which was based on the U.S. Equal Protection Clause. And the court agreed with that. And then India passed a constitutional amendment saying that you could discriminate in order to help, quote, backward classes. There is a similar provision in the new Canadian Bill of Rights, so they can avoid Bakke and Weber and all of this kind of litigation. There is a section with a marginal note. This is what we say about affirmative action. Well, all over the world, we are having conflicts. They did a very sloppy job on the new Philippines Constitution. Cognizant of this distinction between justiciable rights and other types of rights, they have 2 separate sections. They're not careful on saying which are enforceable, but the Supreme Court of the Philippines knows. But you see, then you run into a mess. In the human rights section is a clause taken right out of our First Amendment, for example, on freedom of religion. And in the social rights and general policies, there's a clause right out of the Soviet Constitution guaranteeing absolute separation of church and state. What the courts are going to do with that, we have yet to find out. And incidentally, this is the kind of sloppy thing Because right down the street when they wrote that Constitution, it was all in secret. Madison's notes weren't revealed for 50 years. Nobody spoke about what's going on. Now you're under the light of the television cameras, and people get up at these constitutional conventions, and they couldn't care less what goes in the Constitution. The guy's running for Senate. Let's have absolute separation of church and state, and then they go back and tell their constituents what they do. Now, it is frequently said that, boy, don't they have all of these rights in the Soviet Constitution? You see, in 1924, and again in 36, in order to curry the favor of the West and to garner some more useful idiots, there were certain things put into the Constitution that sounded fancy. But I've had, these are excerpts from the Soviet Constitution, and each one of these things has an exception. In other words, you have these rights, but, you see, you have the rights to property, but the state protects and provides conditions for growth, and no one has a right to use property for personal gain and selfish ends. So for every granting, there is a loophole. Significantly, at this particular time, and boy, I'm sure 8 minutes are going fast, at least there was an attempt. At least there was some kind of semblance, even if it wasn't obeyed, even if there was a kicker in some of the constitutions. But this new one of the Sandinistas, this to me is the scariest constitution that's come across the pike. Listen to this. This is their variation of freedom of speech. The means of mass communication are in the service of national interests. The state shall promote the access of the public and its organizations through the means of communications, and shall prevent them from responding to foreign interests or to the monopolies of any economic group. Period. So this doesn't even have a semblance of freedom of speech. Finally, one point. You note in our Constitution that Hamilton and Madison thought we didn't need an enumeration of rights, because the whole Constitution set up rights. And of course, if we were writing our Constitution over, we would have, can you imagine this country with this handful of people, this huge area, somebody getting up and saying, wouldn't it be a good idea to have in the Constitution freedom to leave your country if you want to? They look at the guy as some kind of nut. You want to go? Go. I mean, who's going to stop? In fact, they could wave to you as, anyway. But, of course, if we were redoing our Constitution, things like privacy and so forth would be in there. It's interesting in terms of state of freedom that there is an idea which I tried to incorporate when I wrote the Liberian Constitution on access to television, because the government owns all television. What good is freedom of speech if a political party can't have access to television? And so written into the Constitution with an appeal to the court is that freedom of speech also involves access to television. So there are certain things you want to do to keep up to date. But the main difference in the constitutional theory today are between the American idea, no law shall be passed prohibiting this, no law shall be passed prohibiting that, because these rights are inherent. We were born with them, and the state shall not take them away. While the new style constitutions come along, the state shall guarantee that you have this freedom, the state shall guarantee that you have that, which of course is foreign to our general policy, and sometimes it's good, but generally, who wants to look at the state to help? 8 minutes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very, very much for...